Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the best... Oh, bollocks. Watch the 50 best horror movies ever and talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with a K and I'm joined by...
Ben Errington.
Oh, off to a good start.
This is great. Oh!
So last week we talked about Drag Me to Hell. It was a very fun episode. We had some lovely feedback. Did someone tweet to us about it? I think Andy...
Yeah. Somebody might have tweeted to us about it. I think Andy CT on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think he said something along the lines of, "It was the best episode of a podcast he's ever listened to." It was. He just had some nice things to say. I think he just said he enjoyed the episode and he has been enjoying the episodes.
Okay, that's good.
Which is nice.
Yeah, it's good to know that people listen and enjoy it.
So
I should probably just quickly say there's a new website with the whole list on. And it's got all the pictures of the films and stuff. If you go to theotherstories.net, that's our like podcast network website. And you'll have there's our other shows there as well. But the Horror Hangout stuff is there and you can, you know, check it out.
It does look good. It looks lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. Nice visual interpretation of the list.
Yeah.
So you can see what we're gonna be talking about in the future as well.
Yeah. So today we're talking about The Skin I Live In. Ben, do you wanna tell us a little bit about what's it about?
I will tell you a little bit about what it's about. Okay.
We need a jingle for that.
We do need a jingle. Do you know what? That would be a pretty good jingle for, I think, for all the different sections of this podcast. It would be good if we had a jingle. If anyone wants to supply a jingle for us, the bit about where Ben says what it's about. That'd be good. I'd like that. Okay, yeah, I'll get on with it. The Skin I Live In is a 2011 Spanish psychological thriller film written and directed by Pedro Almodóvar.
Is that how you're pronouncing it? Almodóvar?
Almodóvar.
We'll go with that. Okay.
Almodóvar. That sounds good
Almodóvar.
To me.
Okay, yeah.
Starring Antonio Banderas and Elena Anaya, and it is based on Thierry Jonquet. Jonquet's novel, Migale. Lots of different words to say. First published in French and then in English under the title Tarantula. So basic plot here. A brilliant plastic surgeon haunted by past tragedies creates a type of synthetic skin that withstands any kind of damage. His guinea pig, a mysterious and volatile woman who holds the key to his obsession. Not an actual guinea pig.
No.
There's no guinea pig. There's no guinea pigs in this film.
No. So this is what the people at Empire have to say. Something like a Frankenstein fable. The Skin I Live In is nevertheless fed through Pedro Almodóvar's idiosyncratic filter to become something else. Based on, I'm going with Thierry Thierry Jonquet's novel Tarantula is the story of it's the story of a scientist's illegal human experiments, ostensibly into artificial skin to be used for burn victims. The upshot is kidnap and sexual reassignment in disturbing 2 hours, described by the director as a horror without screams or scares. Plenty to keep you awake, though. Also significant as a reunion of Almodovar with his frequent former star Antonio Banderas. The pair hadn't worked together since the Time Me Up, Time Me Down 21 years earlier. I've not seen that. So Rotten Tomatoes gave it 80% fresh. It's got a 70% Metacritic score, and Mr. Ebert gave it 3 out of 4. So it's not as highly rated as some of the other films we've had. On the Horror Hangout Board of Advisors, which is our lovely little Facebook group, if you want to have your say, go search for that on Facebook. Johan Chipol says, I saw this in the cinema. It left me speechless and empty the moment I left. Had so many conflicting and uncomfortable feelings about the film. Having this dark and unusual subject that is tough to explain and difficult to share because of the twist reveal. I enjoyed it a lot, but not without leaving a bitter taste in your mouth. It is the same feeling when people watch Requiem for a Dream. Excellent movie, but tough to recommend. And then Edward Harvey said, yeah, I saw it on the big screen too. It's incredibly disturbing. It's one of those films that's well executed and does its job, but you have no desire to see it again because once was harrowing enough. So Ben, have you seen this before?
No, this was my first time.
And how did you feel about it?
Did you know
what the twist was, by the way? Did you?
No.
Okay, cool.
No. I didn't know what the twist was. I guess it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like, it's a twist, but it's not a twist that's revealed like bang.
It's not a Sixth Sense rug pull. Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's kind of like it's drip fed, and when you decide to get on board with the twist is like at one particular point or another, there's probably a few places where the penny could drop.
Yeah.
Initially, I wasn't so sure about this film. It kind of, the first 30 minutes or so, I really wasn't sure. I really wasn't sure what I was going to make of it. I was a bit kind of like, is this really sort of my kind of thing? But then as soon as it kind of kicks off from there, I thought it was pretty fantastic, to be fair.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. And I was gripped.
This is the most, of all the films I've watched so far, this was the one film when I don't think I've looked away from the screen. I was so, like, in it.
Yeah.
Like,
no, it was, I know
so
what you mean.
So gripping. Yeah.
That's true, because unfortunately, in the world of smartphones, you might be thinking, I recognize that guy. Who's that guy? I'll have a little Google of him. or you might be doing something else.
Oh, yeah, he's from. Yeah. Happens all the time.
Yeah, but
he looks a bit. It's not him.
But yeah, I was pretty engrossed from the get go, and didn't, as I said, the first 30 minutes were maybe for me a bit slow.
Yeah.
But as soon as there's an introduction of a certain character, that was for me where it kind of kicked off, and yeah. I did find it hard to look away.
And it's like breadcrumbs. There's like so many little clues dropped that just keep you going. Wait, what? Who's that? Who is that person? And then it just keeps you pulling through all the way through. Right.
Yeah, and obviously because the order of the film isn't chronological either. Mm. You kind of go back a few times and then back and then forward, and I'm assuming it jumps around a little bit.
Yeah.
When you get on board with it, you know what I mean? When you realise exactly what has happened, what the overarching story and narrative is.
Yeah.
Then it does. It really hits home. It's like a punch to the face.
Yeah, it's tragic. I really found it quite tragic, this film. But like, so I mean, I don't know if it's like it's to do with the story that sort of keeps you engaged, but I think also the directing style I found really engaging. Like, I found like that it was really nice to look at. The music was really cool and really interesting, and it didn't look like a horror film. It looked somewhere on like a fashion film or like a not as far gone, but leaning towards Wes Anderson's sort of eye for color and aesthetic.
Yeah. It was very pretty.
Yeah.
And very like, pretty, yeah. And very cold in terms of like cinematography and the color palette. It was very cold. It was very like white and gray and silver, and everything seemed to be lit really well, but also everything was very stark and sort of quite in your face. So it was quite difficult to.
There was the bits where it was showing the main character's little laboratory setup, and it felt, I know what you mean, cold in the sense of it just looked like you were watching, like not look around you, but the thing that look around you takes the mick out of. So there was like school biology things. But it was really good. So I should probably just talk about the key players quickly. So Antonio Banderas, he plays Dr. Robert Ledgard. And he's extremely controlling, very dashing, if I do say so myself. And he But he's well, we don't know he's a plastic surgeon initially. We just know that he's making skin. That's like the only thing like we know at the start. He's like a very clever guy, obviously, and he's making skin.
Just making some skin, making, you know. He's got one of his home skin making kits for Christmas.
Yeah,
and he's gone crazy with it.
Yeah. Someone once said, "Yo, man, give me some skin," and he was like, "I don't know what that means." So he completely took the wrong end of it.
He went away, took it completely the wrong way, went away and said, "I'll give him some skin.
Yeah.
I'll give skin like he's never had before."
20 years later, that's after like his all his medical degrees, he takes a flap of like soggy skin to this guy who's he's like, "I don't know what's going on." Okay, anyway,
I don't know what you want me to do with that.
He probably eats it. It looks quite edible. Anyway, yeah. Alina Anaya plays Vera Cruz. Vera Cruz is this sort of woman who's locked in Robert's house, but she doesn't seem particularly, well, in the start anyway, she doesn't seem to be particularly sad about the fact. She seems sort of comfortable in a way. Like the place where she's living in the room looks very lived in. There's lots of books. There's lots of writing on the walls and pictures and art and stuff. And she makes a joke near the beginning. So you don't feel that bad for her in a way, but there's something very odd about that whole situation. And then there's some other characters. There's a housemaid who I thought was Robert's mum for the entire film, called Maria.
She was played by the same lady from The Devil's Backbone as well, wasn't she?
Was she?
The headmistress.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Is that the first recurring actress?
Yeah,
possibly, so. For this list.
Isn't that funny? Because like we were just saying, like I would have got my phone out to check that, but I didn't. I was too engrossed in the story. And then you've got a guy called Vicente, which we'll talk about later. Another guy called Zika, which we'll talk about later. It's a pretty fun scene. And then Norma. Norma plays Robert's daughter. We don't meet her for a long time. And his wife as well, who we won't mention just yet. But yeah, so it opens with this lovely little shot of Toledo. And we've got Robert Ledgard. He's talking about this skin he's made to a big group of people. This is like the very sort of dry part of the story because it's not that interesting. It's like watching a guy make a presentation.
PowerPoint.
Yeah.
He's doing a PowerPoint presentation on his skin.
Yeah. I think it's really nice. This whole thing about skin is I think it's a bit of a red herring. I mean, what do you think? Because it doesn't really come into it. Like after the first 20 minutes, they sort of abandon this whole bit.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I kept thinking, when are they going to return to the skin stuff?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a bit of a red herring. It was kind of like a setup to sort of introduce, like obviously, yeah, he was trying to develop a synthetic skin.
Yeah.
But that was kind of like an afterthought after.
Yeah.
Some stuff he'd already done. So clearly, it was just a setup to try and introduce him as this brilliant plastic surgeon, perhaps.
They could have done that, like, because this skin, we're not doing it properly. So this skin, it's super hard skin, and like it doesn't burn. It's like burn proof skin that he's making that he feels like he could put onto people. So it's not even like a normal achievement. Like it's not within the realms of reality. Like if they were going to have him, let's introduce this doctor who's a brilliant scientist. Why don't you just say, give him a presentation about how he's found a new way to do a boob job that like has minimum scar tissue. Do you know what I mean? He's like, he's made this new skin. It just seems so bonkers to me, especially because that's not used in the story. Yeah. So everyone in the crowd's like, oh, that's amazing. It sounds kind of weird. He said he's been testing it on mice, and he's saying it works really well. But then after the presentation, someone comes back to him and says, I know you, Robert, you've tried this on a human, haven't you? And then he says, yes. So we know something's weird. Yeah, we know something's going on there. And then we go to his house. How would you describe
his house? He's got a nice place, isn't he?
Yeah, it's proper. It's proper digs. It's a beautiful life estate. I would like to set a holiday there at some point.
As long as you don't lock me away.
Yeah. I know, that's the room I'd like to stay in. It's quite peaceful.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
You do a bit of yoga in there.
Yeah. So then we've got like some people in the house who are caretakers and stuff. And then we've got Marilla, or Maria. She's the main caretaker. And then there's these video screens on the wall, and they show Vera, who's the woman who's sort of locked in this room. And like I said, she doesn't seem that put out. She seems relatively comfortable. She's doing some yoga. She just seems to be, you know,
she's living the dream.
Living the dream, yeah.
She's living the dream against her own will.
People are making food for her. She literally doesn't have to go to work.
No.
Not paying rent, I imagine.
I doubt she's paying rent. I doubt they got it's set up so she's, or direct debits going into,
yeah,
or a bank transfer into Antonio Banderas's account every month. Because, you know, how would she be earning her money? Unless she's like a online yoga teacher or something. But I'm looking into it too much.
Babe Station.
Yeah, Babe Station.
Yeah.
It's potential that she's doing Babe Station. And there's a niche Babe Station audience for people, yeah, with synthetic skin.
Yeah.
Unbreakable synthetic skin. You know, yeah, that works for some people.
Yeah. That's basic introduction to the story. So we've got this woman in this room, and then Robert comes home and he says these other people, they have to go, they can't work here anymore, but Maria, you stay here, you're now the sole caretaker of this house, because there's people getting suspicious with what he's doing, and he doesn't want people coming around to the house, obviously because he's got a secret in the shape of a woman in a room. And then he goes out for a bit. I don't think he says where he goes. Maybe he does, but I imagine he just goes out for some fish and chips or something. And then
Subway.
Whilst he's out, Maria's son Zika arrives. He's done a robbery. He's knocked on the door. He's like, I've done a robbery. He's looking for somewhere to hide out. By the way, I'm dressed as a tiger.
with a really good tail as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, I'm dressed as a tiger. That was like it's weird because the tiger bit was kind of like, that was never, yeah, what mentioned that much, really. It was like, I'm dressed like a tiger, I've done a robbery, I haven't seen you in 10 years, mum.
Well, she didn't recognize me at first, did she? Is it because she's like, I don't remember giving birth to a tiger? And then he goes, no, it's me.
I've remembered everything that's come out of me, and there was definitely no tigers. Not at any point, especially one as big as you.
Was there?
Was there? Yeah. So she had an affair with what's his name from the Frosties, and what can I think of his name?
Tony the Tiger.
It's too obvious. Tony the Tiger. Her and Tony the Tiger.
You know
had
what
to
say about him in the bedroom, don't you?
Go on.
He's great. Okay. Anyway. okay. So this Maria's son Zika, he's a proper goon. Like, if you think about the word goon, he is that. He's absolutely a goon.
He's off his nuts.
Saying it now. Absolutely goon. Full on goon. He looks actually a bit like the guy from the Goonies, come to think of it, but not quite as deformed.
Yeah, he's got a scar. He's got some scar. Yeah. Scarification.
Yeah.
He's got a funny little lip, isn't he? Has he got a funny little scarred lip? Or maybe
he's got scars around his eye and on one side of his face. He's got some more on the other side.
That's what happens. He's got into a fight with another tiger, hasn't he? He's got into a fight with another tiger, trying to, you know, assert their dominance.
Yeah.
He does
very much so. So he comes and he's like, look, mum, I need to hide somewhere. We find out here that he knows Robert from somewhere in the past. And
a little bit of history.
And he's like, let me in. I'm dying for a sandwich, mum. And so she comes, she lets him in. And then he's eating this sandwich. And whilst he's eating.
What sandwich was it? Derry Lee?
Is that what it was? I didn't even see. I wasn't looking.
I don't know. Yeah,
why not?
I reckon so. That's what you make for your son. Like, if she's making it for her son, it's got to be Derry Lee, cut into four.
No, I eat cheese and ketchup. Cheese and ketchup sandwiches.
That's
I used to have.
Madness. That's utter madness.
Right, it's like cheese and tomato, but like good tasting tomato.
Cheese and tomato, like for the, you know, yeah, the real budget.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, cheese and tomato sandwiches, I really am sick of when you bite into them, the tomato doesn't come out in like one mouthful, it pulls the sandwich apart. It's like, I'm not going without a fight. It just sticks onto the sandwich as best it can.
I find like fresh tomato to be quite wet in a sandwich, quite a wet ingredient.
Too wet.
way too wet. It's like
slickens, slickens and sogs everything up.
Sogs the bread. The bread, you know, you've got this bread soaked. You got this bread soaked in just like tomato water, and yeah, it's just disgusting.
Yeah, that's why I don't get BLTs from like sandwich shops and stuff.
Yeah, I've got no time for a BLT.
No, because they're pre-packaged, and by the time you open them, like the bread is full on. It's sogged and then dried.
Yeah, you have to wring the bread out, yeah, and then put it back in the sandwich.
Yeah. And then like you've got sauce on top of that. It's just too soggy.
Just, you need a plastic bag to just keep it all together.
Also, BLT, now to me, if I have a BLT, I feel like I'm missing the chicken. Because it's like, to me, it's chicken BLT is the standard. Like, if I get a BLT, it's just bacon, lettuce, tomato. I feel like this is missing something right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So Zika's eating a BLT, I think. No, cheese and tomato sauce sandwich. And he's got some Frosties on the go there as well, probably. And as he's eating, he sees one.
Sorry, this is getting silly.
And as he's eating, he sees the video screens, and he's like, oh, "That's an interesting film, black and white. I like art." And then he realizes it's not a film; it's one of the video cameras with Vera on it, and she's doing some yoga. Now, we didn't know this going into the film, but Zika's biggest turn on is yoga.
He should have announced that before. they should have, when he announced him, he should have said he absolutely loves yoga and he's a pest. He's a pest.
He sees some yoga and it lights him up. He's like, I've got to have sex with that yoga woman. And then he starts running around the house. I know he ties his mum up first, shoves her. By the way, he's an idiot. Like it can't be understated. Like the way he talks, he's almost like he's not all there in the head.
Yeah.
And he's putting this handkerchief down his mum's throat to keep her quiet and all this stuff. It's pretty grim.
Maybe we need to. He's dressed like a tiger because there's a carnival on in the city, and he's using the tiger disguise. Well, he's using it as a sort of disguise, isn't he?
Because that's the it. Police are after him. Yeah.
Because the fuzz are after him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not just wearing a tiger suit, although it is a bit random. But then, so he's running around the house, and then he finds the room with Vera in. He goes in there, and he, like you said, Ben, he asserts his dominance, and he does the bad thing, does a rape, and she doesn't like it, obviously. But also he calls her a name, or like he recognizes her. He's like, I thought you were dead. She obviously doesn't know who the hell this guy is. And then he's like there's a horrible bit where it's like his mouth is right around her face. He reminded me of Drag Me to Hell. Like he's got his jaw,
yeah,
right on a jaw, on a chin, and it's horrible.
He's just being a bit full on, isn't he? I mean,
too much flowers.
It's just too much. Just take a step back, for God's sake.
Yeah, keen, are we? And what was he doing? Oh yeah, so he rapes her, and then instantly after raping her, he falls asleep. Like just falls asleep on top of her. And he did eat a big lunch though, so he could have been a bit tired out. Robert comes home and he sees Zika asleep on what's her face? Vera, and then he shoots him in the back. And
shoots him in the back, yeah, exactly. Which is, you know, that's well deserved punishment for coming in dressed as a tiger, tying up your mum.
I will not stand for tigers in my house.
No, they get shot immediately. And then raping his guinea pig. Metaphorical guinea pig that he's making a synthetic skin for. You know, I mean, he's bounded into this story and just completely fucks it up. Yeah. You know?
And so you are right. So the big thing here is he's seen someone violating his property, basically. I think that's the way he sees it. And he loses his shit and he shoots the guy. So then whilst he's taking... the guy's body, taking Tiger Pants' body away to burn it or take it to the vets or whatever, I don't know. Vera starts asking Maria about, he said he knew me. And then we find out There's a bit of a flashback here. So what happened? So he went off with Robert's wife in the past, and they were in a car crash. They were both horribly burnt. I imagine that's where he got his scars, and he left Robert's wife to burn to death. But she didn't die. She made it out, and Robert sort of helped her, but her skin was all badly burned. And then she saw herself, tried to commit suicide, or did commit suicide, jumped out of a window, and at which then mentally scarred their child, Norma, who we haven't even met yet. There's so many, this is what I mean, like, there's like these threads in this story that just keep on like tugging and pulling you along. This mentally scars their child, Norma, and it also kills his wife, obviously. So after all this sort of chaos, Robert gets back, and then he lets her not sleep. She says, like, you don't have to sleep in your room anymore. You can sleep in my bed. So he's let her out.
He's let her out. Yeah, exactly. Which is nice of him, you know. It's nice of him to have done that.
Yeah. Plus their beds are, like, bloody and stuff now.
It's bloody. It's covered in tiger stuff.
Yeah. Did he have sex at that point?
Yeah, I think no. They definitely have sex, and then she says it's hurting her.
Okay, yeah.
Obviously after, and after Antonio that. Banderas does the gentlemanly thing and says, "Well, we it's okay. We will stop."
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't do it, Zika. He says no. Okay, that's fine. But then he falls asleep, and I feel like this film is told in three parts, like three acts, and very sort of defined. Feel like that's the end of act one, so it ends with him letting her out and embracing her, and they start like cuddling and stuff, and then they both fall asleep in the bed, and then we go to act two. So this is where the sort of the time jumps start happening. That makes it sound too time travel-y. I just mean like flashbacks. So we get, first of all, we go into Robert's head and we jump back 6 years to this really smooth jazz, like it's a wedding. There's a jazz band playing, and it's a really nice sort of like little jazz outfit going on. There's people dancing. Robert's talking to some people. He seems okay. We find out this is after his wife committed suicide. Norma, his daughter, has grown up to some degree. She's a teenager now. And we find out that mentally scarred her, and she hates being around people. So this is one of her first ventures out of the mental institution or wherever she's been staying. And she's talking to some boys. They seem like they're having a good time. Robert loses track of her at one point, and then he goes outside to try and find her. The party's sort of, the music's still playing behind them. He finds a load of teenagers having sex in the gardens,
It was an orgy going on. Yeah. You know what I mean, it was way too much. You know, I would have just like dispersed them. I would have just walked into the middle of it, clapping my hands.
Yeah,
you know, fired a gun maybe just to disperse them.
And he sees, he walks past them as if it's normal. Like, is that what Spain is like? I don't know. I've only been once. People weren't doing that in the streets.
I've never been, so I don't remember.
You should book a trip. It's fantastic. people having sex in the streets, dude. Come on. he's going through the gardens, and he sees Norma's shoes on the floor and then a jumper, and he finds her knocked out on the floor. And then it looks like she's been raped by this tree. She wakes up. She loses her...
What?
You are...
I thought you said raped by a tree. That was Evil Dead.
He wakes her up, and she goes... She, like, loses it. She can't handle it. Starts, like, trying to push him away and stuff. And then we... cut a little bit forward in time, and then we find out that she killed herself. I think she jumped out of a window as well. I'm not too sure, actually. I think.
Yeah, well, there's a point where it was talk about her mother jumping out of a window, and then we said, and eventually Norma followed her out of the window. Obviously,
right, yeah,
not the same window, but that's both the way to get weird way to kill yourself, jumping out of a window, I think, especially from like just it looked like the first floor.
Yeah, it didn't look very high. You'd have to like commit and like swan dive into the floor, like to try and really break something.
I'd take a multitude of different ways other than that. I think.
train track, I guess, or
yeah.
There's a few ways you could do it. Google it. I mean, Don't actually. There's a Samaritan's hotline. You should get in touch with them. So she killed herself. We didn't mention as well. Before he found his daughter unconscious on the floor, he saw a motorbike driving away. But then, so because of the future, she's killed herself. Pretty much gives the whole backstory of Robert of why he's like the way he is. Like the women in his life, all commit suicide, or like all get ruined in some way. They all get scarred in some way. One got like burned, and the other got mentally scarred, and they all jump out of windows and die.
Yeah. So it's at this point you kind of think, is he keeping Vera, and he's trying to turn Vera into some sort of like perfect woman that he can like control and sort of make look perfect? And with the unbreakable skin thing, you think maybe he's doing this so that she wouldn't be able to commit suicide. Yeah, maybe, she'll never get hurt. So that's his coping mechanism, I guess, for losing his wife and his.
I did mention as well, he also seems to view her as some sort of piece of art. There's like in his bedroom where his office, there's a giant video screen in there. And then when it's just showing a picture of Vera on this video screen, he just looks like he's looking at art. Like it's his big art piece on the mantle. So he obviously he idolizes Vera. She's his perfect woman and he's not going to let anything happen to her. But then we come back and then so they're back in bed, and this time, so this is the second time I saw this film, and now so I know what the twist is.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And then as it went into Vera's mind, it did this really interesting thing where it had, I'm not going to say just yet, but it had the other person looking right at her face in like a weird like faded opacity thing. It was really interesting. It was really nice to see. But there's lots of little bits like this I didn't notice the first time I watched it. So now we go to a guy called Vicente. He's a new character. He's like a normal lad. Like he works in his mum's clothing shop. He wants to go to a party. He said the lads are all on out on the piss tonight. We're going for it. And then he goes in. It turns out there's the wedding where Norma got raped. Supposedly raped. So all his friends and a lot of girls, they all pair off. Obviously, the others they find a bush, you know, get to the fucking and get to the orgy they've got sorted out. So Norma is obviously unhinged the way she talks to Vicente. And Vicente's off his tits on pills or whatever he's taking as well. He's off his face on drugs. Yes. He just assumes he's on drugs as well.
Yeah, which you would. He just says, I've taken, I don't know what I've taken everything.
Yeah.
You name it, I've taken it.
Yeah. And I've got to say, the actress who plays Norma, she looks really crazy. her eyes are constantly moving around, shifting. She doesn't look unnatural though. She looks I don't know. She always freaked me out anyway. But then I think every move that she makes, he assumes she's coming onto him in some way. He goes to take a shoe off or something. She trips on a shoe and he starts kissing her. And then they find a tree and they lie down by it. And then he starts having sex with her. But then she starts to freak out, starts to panic. She bites his hand, like really badly bites his hand. And then he slaps her. And then that's what knocks her out. And then he runs away. So he didn't.
Gives it a backhand. He gives her a KO, doesn't he? Oh.
Yeah. Although I don't condone what this Vicente guy did to her. I wouldn't say... I don't know. I don't think it was coming from a bad place. He just thought he was having, consenting
sex with her. Yeah. But then obviously she freaked out and she bit him and he gave her a slap.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit heavy handed, but you know.
And then he gets on his bike and drives away, and then he's obviously like a little bit upset by it. He tells his friend in the shop, and he's like, look, I'm gonna leave this town, and then he goes on a little bike ride. Robert kidnaps him in this really weird makeup, and then
was that makeup, or was that just like a mask of some sort?
Make it out, because it looked so peculiar. I wasn't sure if it had like I think it was a mask. I think it was like some prosthetic sort of Hollywood makeup style nose and stuff on it. I don't know. So Robert, he tracks down Vicente on his bike, kidnaps him, and then we have like the main sort of horror of the story. So he keeps Vicente as a prisoner, and we assume he's just basically torturing this guy because he raped his daughter and was responsible for her death. But he starts to do like weird stuff to him. So he chloroforms him and then puts him in his private...
Oh, well, he shaves him first.
Shaves him first. That was a pretty tense moment.
Gives him the old shave. Yeah, that was pretty tense. So pretty slow on the with the cutthroat razor all the way along.
Yeah. And then he gives him... Oh, what's the term for it? Vagerectomy or something. It's
Vagoplasty. Vaginoplasty. Vaginoplasty. Yeah. Yes. He gives him a vaginoplasty.
Yeah.
And then... I didn't quite get it yet. Did you get it yet?
Well, I don't know, because the last time I saw it was ages ago, so I can't really remember. But this time I was like watching it, knowing sort of all the way through.
I remember. Oh, I know, sorry.
So we're coming to like the slow twist of it. So he then puts Vicente, it's really sad. Like Vicente wakes up and he says, "What did you do to me?" And he goes, "Good, you vaginoplasty." And then he locks him in his room, and then over the course of I don't know how long, but Vicente slowly morphs into Vera, like just a piece.
Yeah, well, there's quite a horrible bit where he brings in these little tools to help him
keep
stretch
the new orifice open. Yeah.
Keep his new orifice open. Yeah. With these slowly bigger sort of objects.
They look like dildos, but they're like solid.
They look like dildos, but
medicinal dildos.
I think medicinal dildos. Yeah, not fun ones.
No,
not fun ones. Yeah. You're not having any fun with these, mate. These are business dildos, and they're only here to make your fanny bigger.
Yeah. Oh dear. Okay.
oh dear.
But it does feel very like tragic, because we know the truth that he didn't rape Norma. We know that like Robert is gone completely like over the top with what he's done. Like, he's kidnapped him. He's given him a sex change.
I mean, a man has obviously made a mistake. He's got involved. He's got himself into a pretty spot above her.
Yeah.
He probably shouldn't have give her a slap.
Or left it like that.
But come on. Yeah, or left it like that. But come on.
Yeah.
He ain't deserving this.
No. And then so it's really sad. So like he gives him like dresses, and he or she, Vera now or Vicente, cuts like just rips them up. He gives him like breasts and stuff, and he like there's one point I think he tries to like cut the breasts off. He just whatever he can do, he's just not. He doesn't feel a woman. He's a man, like he's being forced to become something he's not. So it's really sad. It's really horrible. And then it's a really kind of surreal change to see him slowly morph into Vera, who's this like idealized woman we've seen throughout this entire film. And then...
that's the thing, because I think, like, when we see her in the film, she carries herself with such a sort of, like, grace
yeah.
that you kind of just... You wouldn't think anything different. And then to see Vincente, to see him sort of, like, obviously, essentially going for a sex change against his will.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's a good sort of, like, it's a very interesting take on gender, isn't it, really? Because it's, like, it's a very interesting and unique take because, you know, no one ever... But the reason people get sex changes is because they feel like they were born in the wrong body. So the fact that somebody doesn't feel like that at all and they're being forced to like go from it, there is something quite horrific about that.
Yeah.
Because like, trying to imagine like your whole identity just being completely compromised just because someone's doing it.
Yeah. Like it plays into like one of my biggest fears, which is not getting sex change. But like one of my, I've got this weird fear of being killed or hurt based on someone else's belief system that I don't adhere to. So the best example I can think of that is in The Wicker Man when they burn the main guy because they want to get a new crop. And I find something about that so terrifying. And this is like Robert believes a certain something that isn't true, and we know it's true. Magento knows it's true. Well, he thinks he knows it's true, and it's happening to him. And it's like, it is such an interesting idea of this film. I don't see this film really as a horror, apart from this whole concept. It's such a horrible concept to sort of grasp.
I was wondering what you're going to say was your biggest horror, biggest fear then, having your knob off.
Having
it sliced right off like a stick of butter.
Yeah, and finding it in the fridge the next morning.
Ooh.
Yeah.
There he is. So, I mean, it is... Vincente doesn't really get given a chance to explain himself, and when he does, he can't really remember because he was on so many drugs. He can't remember exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So the fact that he was never really given a chance to explain himself, he never really gets given a chance to sound silly, but apologize. He's never really said, "Look, I'm sorry for what happened, but this is what I remember." You'd be pleading. I think you'd be pleading from the moment you get that vaginoplasty. You'd be pleading for him to just look, just stop, let me go. If that is why you're doing this to me,
You just reminded me of the bit where he does try to kill himself. He slices his own neck.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I completely forgot about that bit. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's weird because I think at this point I would say he's Vera now.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he not?
Yeah. So well, the actress is the actress at that point. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's not like a happy change. It takes a bit of time. He tries to kill himself, like he slits his neck open, but Robert, I think he says something like, we'll have to make the skin stronger or something, which probably leads more into what he's doing later on with the skin thing.
This is getting interesting now because like in terms of like gender roles and stuff, because obviously we're referring to Vincente as a him because that's how he wants to be.
Yeah,
but then in terms of the way he's been sort of gone through, what he's gone through because of at the hands of Antonio Banderas, is he now a she? This is the difficult thing, isn't it, when you get into this thing because he's a he because he wants to be Vincente.
Yeah, I did wonder, like after all this has happened, would he get another sex change or like would he start dressing like a man again? Like, it did sort of make me wonder, like, because he obviously feels like a man. But at some point in this sort of transformation, it loses its sense of revenge for Robert. I think instead it becomes a sense of making a perfect woman, like, to keep in his life. Because it does feel like revenge for a lot of the time. And then it sort of seems to change and he starts to, like, admire her and adore her like you would like a piece of art.
Because early on in the film, who did you think Vera was? Do you remember?
I can't remember the last time I saw it, but
I thought maybe he just, because obviously at one point his housekeeper says you've made her look too much like his ex-wife. Could you not have found someone with a different bone structure or something? I thought that maybe he'd just found somebody. Either somebody who had an accident
And made somebody them look like his wife, yeah.
And made them look like his wife, yeah. I didn't think it was quite as dark. I mean, that's pretty dark as it is, but yeah. I didn't think it was quite as dark.
That sounds like a cool film, though.
Yeah, just find like a drifter, or I don't know. I kind of just thought,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, but then like so that's like the end of part two, and then we come to the part three, which is back in the present day. They wake up in the morning in the bed, and what's the name? Vera, who's now full on Vera, has the perfect opportunity to escape, but then doesn't. So then we start to feel like, oh, okay, so is this Stockholm syndrome now? Is she like? Now yeah. in love with her capturer, who
yeah.
she's hated this entire time.
It did go a bit Beauty and the Beast at this point, didn't it? I was thinking. Yeah. They love each other after yeah. all this. Imagine that. This is another horrible thing. It's like the sort of body horror element of that and the horror of being kept against your will somewhere, and now the thought of being in love with your captor as somebody who does, we assume, still want to be a man.
Yeah,
it's a bizarre sort of. Yeah, it is a bizarre. Yeah. It makes you feel bizarre things. It makes you. It is a confusing.
Yeah.
Premise, I think.
And then, one of Robert's colleagues who helped him do the operation on Vicente, comes back and he starts threatening, saying,
"I've got your number, mate.
I've got your number. You shouldn't have done that. Like, I think that's the person you're doing experiments on."
He's got a newspaper story
exactly,
saying that
yeah.
Vincente has been missing for quite a number of years.
Yeah. And then Vera gets another opportunity now to jump in and say, yes, he did this to me, help me. But she doesn't, and instead says, that was me, but I didn't do it against my will. I'm now living with Robert, and he sits on his lap and kisses, and it looks like they're just going to be really happy. And they're just going to feel like that's the way it's going to end. But then the next morning, it's that night, they're about to have sex. She's like, I've got some lube downstairs. She goes to get the lube, but gets a gun instead. And then shoots that mofo.
And tell you about Darius at this point, when he's like, he is so impatient.
Yeah.
You got to get the lube, are you? Right, go and get the lube right now. She's like, I'm off to get the lube. She's downstairs looking for the lube / gun. Yeah. Have you got the lube? Shouting down the stairs. Jesus, Antonio Banderas, you horny bastard.
Yeah, and like all the while, Maria, his housemate, is like in the room, like, oh God. She's trying to sleep, and he's like, they're shouting about lube.
Oh, yeah. She's like, tucking into a good book, and she's like,
oh dear.
Got a bloody lube!
Puts her headphones on. so then, like, we realize that, like, no, she's not got Stockholm Syndrome. This is just all like a ploy so she could kill them.
It was the long game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the long con. Yeah. She killed Maria, right? Marilla.
Yeah, she did.
She kills
Antonio Banderas, then she hides under the bed.
Marilla
comes upstairs to sort of see what the ruckus is about. She's like, oh, who's got the bloody lube then? And then she pops a cap in her ass from under the bed.
James Bond style. She just like shoved her arm out.
Yeah. Comes out from under the bed. It's like, yeah. There you go. And then she squirts the lube over them both. No, she didn't do that.
This is like the most horrific James Bond film I've ever seen, if that was the case. Turns out to be Daniel Craig at the end. Like, can you imagine the uproar if this was the plot of the new James Bond film? We wanted to make her a woman, but we didn't think you'd go for it, so we started her as a man.
Yeah.
And we just
we knew there'd be uproar, but there always is. We knew there'd be uproar. Yeah. Uproar about different Doctor Who companions. Uproar about James Bond being a woman or Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Right, we'll start her off as a man.
Give them all what they want. Yeah. Please, everyone.
Please all the crowds, you know? And there we go. To be fair, Antonio Banderas would be a good Bond villain, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
As a good sort of plastic surgeon.
As this guy who has, like, guinea pigs, who eat, like, guinea pig people with solid skin and stuff. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then James Bond. Just a completely different storyline. James Bond could be, like, wooing the women. And then suddenly Antonio Banderas would go, actually, these are men. And they'd start fucking battering him. Not saying that women couldn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'd be a good little plot. This sounds like the plot to the new Austin Powers.
The new Austin Powers.
Yeah. If there was going to be one.
Yeah.
We could write it.
God, yeah. So she basically gets on a bike, I think, or something. And then she drives away. She goes back to her mum's. And this is like the most tragic scene in the entire film, I thought. He goes back to his mum's shop. And I think it's his sister or his friend still works there.
Yeah, I think it's a friend. It's a friend, but I think he kind of like had a thing for her.
Right, yeah. And he's like, he goes to her first. Like, no, so he finds them both first, his mum and the friend. And then the mum just shuns him off as if, like, I have no idea who you are. I'm busy.
Get out of it.
But then his friend comes and helps him in the shop. And then he's like, look, I'm Vincente. I was kidnapped and he gave me a sex change to get into my will. I've just killed two people to get here. And then it's like, the mum comes in and then he says, I am Vincente. And it fades to black. And oh my God, that fades to black. Films don't fade to black anymore. But that was, to me, such a good ending. Like,
yeah. Well, he does say to his friend as well, he says something about the dress that he was wearing.
Yeah, to prove that that it was him.
To prove that it's him.
Like, you know, most like horror films, they escape from the villains and then they just drive off into the sunset and you expect everything's going to be okay.
But, like, and the villain's in the back seat.
Oh! They like drive off into the sunset and the credits roll or whatever. But this film, like, I'm so glad it took it a little bit further and then it got him arriving at the family's house and it just like sort of opened up a whole, his life's never going to be good. Like, well, it's never going to be the same. They're completely ruined. And like, just that whole, I am Vicente, that last line, he's defining that I'm not a woman, I am still Vicente, and it just fades to black. That's a proper mic drop moment, I thought. This was a great film. I think I absolutely loved it, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is a masterclass, really, in a bizarre sort of thriller / horror sense.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no blood and guts or gore or sort of like even Antonio Banderas as the captor. There's not really much violence in it.
Yeah.
I know we've got people shooting people. Yeah, but I mean, in terms of violence, as in, you know, it's when people get shot, it's just like bang, you're dead. That's kind of it. There's no Antonio Banderas stalking her or doing some horrible things other than the terrible plastic surgeries he's doing.
Yeah, it's like masterclass is right, I think, because so this is, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Paul Almodovar. He's done a lot of films. I've not seen any of his other films, but I know there's a whole, like I told my friend at work, Ed, that we were talking about this film today, and he was like, oh, Paul Almodovar, I've seen all these other films. I used to really be into him. Like, this is like a good director, and like, it's so well paced, it's so well put together, it's so stylish. Like I said, the music is amazing. And it deals with a really interesting take on the whole Frankenstein sort of story.
It's a very unique take on that story, but also a very unique take on anything sort of like body horror or sort of Stockholm Syndrome captive type thing. I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those twists. You know, when you get one of those twists in a film, you're like, oh God, that's a unique, like, that's not something. Because usually in films, you try and compare it to something else. You try and go, oh yeah, it's a bit like this and it's a bit like that. Yeah. It's real difficult to sort of say what it is like.
You know what, when you don't have something to compare it to, like for me, because I saw this film a long time ago, the scenes in this film and shot and the whole like, concept of it, it's stuck with me ever since. Like, I've always thought, when I've seen other things that reminded me of it, I'd always thought, oh, it's like that Skin I Live In film. Like, so yeah. this becomes your point of reference, which means it's a completely original thing.
Yeah, there was very like little blood in it as well, was it? I know we saw a couple of like pools
just,
of blood.
I was just thinking the throat slitting bit. That did shock me a bit. Actually,
yeah, but she didn't cut very deep, did she? So it wasn't like a massive big jet of blood or something.
No. So jump scares. I don't think there's any jump scares.
Do you know what a jump scare was for me?
What's that?
I've given you a vaginoplasty. Oh, Jesus Christ in heaven! You've done what?
Yeah.
I only came in to get a wisdom tooth taken out.
Yeah.
You've really gone over the top here, mate.
Was that like a shitty pants moment then?
Yeah, I mean, that was I don't know, because I don't think I saw that bit coming at all until he said, I've given you a vaginoplasty. That was when I went, son.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, it wasn't really, it wasn't the kind of film that needed any sort of jump scare, was it?
No.
Shit your pants moment. Maybe like the the shaving. It was a bit like, oh, that's on edge.
It was tense, sure. Yeah, it was tense, but it wasn't like...
But then we knew he wasn't going to just go. You know, he'd gone to a lot of effort.
Yeah. I watched it with Kat, and Kat said, like, was lying like on my shoulder, and she was like, oh, you're breathing really... Like, your heart's beating quite fast, and, like, you're not breathing properly. And I was like, oh, I didn't realise, but I was so tense, like, tense by the whole... It was a shaving scene, and the whole...
It was a shaving scene.
That whole scene, it was just so, like, tense. The thought of you
being shaved. You're just like, don't want to look at me. Yeah, I went away. I went away and pretty much started shaving immediately.
Yeah, you started the gender reassignment now. Yeah.
I've started it. Antonio Banderas, I'm going to have him on the phone. Yeah. Can you sort me out a cheap vagina plasty? How much? Shove up your ass. As long as he can get me some, as long as he can get me some business dildos, I'll be happy. I wonder how much he charges. I wonder if they come in a little case.
Yeah, you need a what they call green, not a green card. What do they call them cards for medicinal marijuana?
A card for a business dildo. Yeah. They go up in size. You've got to start off here and then get all the way up here.
Got to send up for a starter pack.
I ain't got time for that.
Yeah,
I'm starting at the end. I'm working my way back. All right.
Okay, all at once then. All in
yeah,
one.
Yeah, like a Russian doll.
Yeah. So trivia. You ready for trivia? Pedro Almodovar worked on the screenplay for almost a decade, and what initially was an adaptation ended up being more of a story inspired by the novel rather than a straight adaptation.
Yeah, that sounds like it could be true.
True. You are correct. Number two, Ledgard calls a synthetic skin Gal after his first wife because his nickname for his wife was always Gal, as in, that there, that's my gal.
It was called Gal.
Yes.
But why? I don't reckon that's the reason. False.
Okay, cool. Correct.
Okay.
Number three, that over there, that's my gal. Go on, Gal.
Go on, Gal.
The film was the first collaboration in 23 years between Almodovar and Banderas since Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down in 1990.
You've said that, so yes, it's true.
Ah, I caught you out. It's actually 21 years.
Damn!
Fade to black.
Mic drop.
Yeah. Okay, after a few days of shooting, Pedro Almodovar had a conversation with Antonio Banderas in which he told Banderas that he needed to drop all the tics as an actor because he wanted him to play a restrained character, and the actor was playing him more like a typical psycho. So he's basically calm it down, son.
Yeah, calm alarm it down. True?
True, that's correct. the actor who played Zika, the tiger brute, refused to play the sex scene, so instead they used a stunt double. And for any shots of Zika's face, they implored the amazing Imaginarium Studios and the talents of Andy Serkis to bring it to life. So all of those sex scenes, when you see his grunting face, that's the amazing work with Andy Serkis.
True.
Correct. Okay. You know how you get stunt bottoms and stuff? Andy Serkis is the stunt sex face.
All right, okay. He's a stunt ass as well. Each butt cheek was one of Andy Serkis's faces. And he was doing different nuances and tics of that butt cheek in particular. Yeah. Yeah. Didn't he do the tail of Zika's? That was one of his arms. He's like, yeah.
I think you got 4 out of 5 there. We'll give you the last one. Now we need to grade the film. This is a weird one because I was thinking so last week we did Drag Me to Hell and I gave Drag Me to Hell an A-.
He did.
But Drag Me to Hell was a full-on horror... it was enjoyed being a horror roller coaster, a horror theme park of fun and gore and gruesome stuff. This was not that. This was completely different. I'm still leaning towards an A- as well on this because I really did. Out of all the films so far, this is the film that I was like, just could not stop watching it. And I've seen it before. I know the twists and stuff, and I just still couldn't take my eyes away.
That was a good one then. I can't remember what I gave Drag Me to Hell last.
I think you gave it a B because we ended up giving it a B plus in on our
Yeah. Okay. Do you know what you're gonna give this then?
I'm gonna have to go with an A-.
I think I'll go with a B plus on this again. I think I'm reserving my A's for the stuff that I really want to get crazy about.
I do feel like I'm blowing my load a little bit here. I do feel like I'm pulling a Zika. But
You are Tony. Yeah. Tony the Tiger's son.
But you know, I mean, man, it's good. It's a good film. But I can't.
Yeah,
can't
I mean, it is a really good film in terms of, like, I really hope that people would go into this without, you know what I mean? People watching this, listening to the podcast would have already seen it.
Yeah, I mean, I expect they would have because, I mean, I don't know why. Yeah. When I listen to, I listen to like Stephen King podcast after I've read the book, because I like to hear what other people thought about it. So I imagine it's a similar thing. I hope we're not spoiling it for people.
Oh, exactly. It'd be a weird one to experience the film without knowing that.
Maybe we should put that at the start of the show and say, this episode is full of spoilers.
Yeah, we'll do that. And for anyone who's just listened to this whole show and been spoiled for a while,
beware, because there are spoilers in the show.
There are spoilers in the show.
Just warn
them
right
at the end.
There are spoilers at the end.
We'll do that at the start of the show from now on.
Okay, but for this episode, you shit out of luck, I'm afraid, guys. You should still watch it, though.
Yeah.
I would recommend you watch it again at some point in the future as well, because there's lots of cool little, like I said, the camera shots where it has Vicente's face on the bed looking at Vera's face, or, like, looking at each other. There's, like, lots of little stuff like that, which I thought was really, really cool. Okay, so next week I know what it is, and I don't think you're going to like it, Ben. Based on your previous reviews, I'm pretty sure, I'm just going to check, but I think it's a Hammer horror film.
It's one of the classics, isn't it?
It's Dracula, I think. Yeah, so it's a 1958 Dracula. Terence Fisher directed. Same director. It's Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing. Yeah.
It's a classic one, so.
Yeah, and then after that, we've got the Blair Witch Project, which would be interesting. I've not seen that for yonks.
I watched that not so long ago, actually. I think I watched it not long before I went to see the new one.
Okay, yeah. How was that?
So yeah, plenty to discuss. The new one is pretty naff. The new one is just like
yeah.
I mean, it tries to do some of the similar things to the original, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's impossible, really. It's impossible. It was of its time, that film.
Yeah. Okay, so this show is brought to you by the Story Studio Hawk & Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com to grab a free book. Also go to theotherstories.net to check out the other films and the other podcasts on our lovely network. Become a patron for early access to episodes, bonus content, and heaps of free stuff at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovacs Kalman for our theme music. You lovely, lovely man. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider giving a 5-star rating and review in iTunes, and remember to hit subscribe. And thank you to my co-host, Ben, for being a real horror dude.
Thanks, Luke.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win. And also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.